Hey, good morning. Good morning. Hey, if you have a Bible, I would love for you to find Galatians chapter 4. Galatians chapter 4. I'll meet you there in just a minute. My name is Ryan Gard. I'm one of the pastors here. If you're brand new, hey, nice to meet you. This morning, we're going to have a little fun. I'm going to pour my guts out all over the place and be incredibly open and honest. For the past three services, so look forward to that. Good times. If you're brand new, this is a great time to come. Today, we're actually just going to do a one weekend, one shot series. It's just a standalone talk that I'd love to give. A handful of months ago, Joel told me I could talk about whatever I want today, as long as it kind of fit within some parameters. You got to put some parameters on me. And so excited for that. But then next week, we're going to kick off a series called Wish You Were Here. And I hope you'll be there. This series, Getting From Where You Are to Where You Want to Be, is the tagline. What we're going to do for 3 weeks is unpack one sentence of Jesus. He was brilliant. It doesn't take you long to unpack one of my sentences, but for 3 weeks, we are going to unpack one sentence in which Jesus showed us, taught us how to get from where we are to where we want to be, assuming that is where he wants us to be, because that's what we want. We're all in a place where we're going, man, I wish this was true. I wish this was true about my life. And it turns out the author of life knew how to live and showed us how to do that. So I'll be a part of that. Joel's going to kick it off next week. Shane Sanchez is going to be up here, our student pastor, because he's incredible. He'll be back up here for one of those weekends. So until then, let's get serious. Can I ask you a question? You can say no, but I got a mic. I want to ask you just a question. What is it? Let's put it up here. What is it that when you get it, you'll finally be satisfied? What is it that when you get it, what is it that when you have it or have attained it, have become it, you'll finally be satisfied? What needs to take place? Let me say it this way. What is it that when it's true about you, you will finally feel significant? What is it? And you just have to do a little business between you and the Lord, your conscience. What is it that I am striving for, chasing, pursuing, hoping that when I get it, I will finally feel like I'm at peace. This is where I'm supposed to be. This is who I'm supposed to be. This is what I'm supposed to be like. What is it for you? For those of you that are a little bit older, maybe you're in the second half, let's call it the second third of life. You just keep going. What is it that for you, you look back and realize you spent years, maybe even decades, some of you, chasing the wrong thing. You look back and you said, man, if I could just get this or get that or get her, get him, get it, whatever it is, and then you got it and you were still striving, seeking, pursuing something that you still didn't have. You still hadn't found what you're looking for, the great Bono put it, right? What is it? Galatians 4 is going to just show us something real basic, real simple, real obvious, that the source is the same for all of us as we pursue those things. And I'm gonna unpack an incredibly simple truth this morning. You may, many of you, if you've been here more than once, have heard some of the things I'm gonna say to you. And I'm gonna share a story with you that I think maybe will help you dive into a truth that we've all known, many of us, for years, but maybe it hasn't fully hit us the way I pray it does this morning. Galatians chapter 4, verse 4. Let me read. This is the Apostle Paul. A lot has happened before Galatians 4, from Genesis 1 on, all the way. He's going to explain that in this sentence, there was a plan of God. So from Genesis 1:1, there was a plan. Like the very first page of your Bible, the story of God's unfolding. He wasn't making it up as he went along, you know? He wasn't just putting it together every day. Like, oh my gosh, they sinned. They ate the apple. Now what? He actually had a plan the entire time. And it says in verse 4, But when the set time had fully come, here comes the plan, is what he's saying. When the set time for the plan to be revealed had come, God did this, you know this. God sent his son, born of a woman, born under the law, sent his son, born of a woman, that's Mary, born under the law, that's Genesis, up until everything left of Matthew. That's the Ten Commandments, that's the 613 laws of God. At that point, when that was true, when that was in charge, when that reigned, when it was law, Jesus came into this world, born under that law, born of a woman, Mary, we know these things, right? Born under, to do what? To redeem those under the law. To redeem, in this language, what he's saying, Paul is saying, is he's going to use some strong language. And you may think you're doing all right, but Paul's going to go, you needed to be redeemed, and to be redeemed is to be bought out of slavery. That's what the word means. To be bought out of slavery implies that I am and you are slaves. And obviously in this day, you say, no, I'm not. I'm a free man. I have freedom. I have liberties. And you're grateful for those things. But Jesus himself, and I'm just reading. Jesus said that anyone who sins is a slave to that sin. You know that. It starts out enjoyable and it ends up owning you. That's the trajectory of our sin. And Jesus says anyone who sins is a slave to sin. The only one who was not a slave to sin that's ever existed was Jesus. And so he was the one that said, I've come to rescue you from that. When the time had come, God sent his son, born under the law. And many of us feel as slaves to even the law, trying to please God, but feeling like we just can't do it. And God said, I'm going to send my son into this situation to buy you back from the slavery to your sin, because you can't keep the law. It's just impossible for you. I'm going to set you free. Free from what? A little bit of review, if you've been coming for a while, Romans chapter 6, written by the same guy, said that the wages of that sin that we're a slave to, what we get for that sin, Romans 6 says, is death. And it's not literal death, obviously, because this would be an empty room. You understand? Like every two-year-old is just gone, right? Just at a moment, right? Like there wouldn't be anyone here. This death that he's speaking of, that he rescued us from, is a spiritual death, a spiritual separation. The separation that took place that we see in the Garden of Eden between Adam and Eve is a picture of what happens in the hearts of men and women every day when we choose to disobey and to trust our own way and to say to God, I think I know better. And the wages of that sin is death. The wages of that is separation. And James chapter 4 paints a scene of a courtroom. It says that there's one lawgiver and one judge. And we know now that that lawgiver, God, is the one and only judge who can look at us and he knows us. And you stand before a holy and righteous judge. This is true. And you've already felt this. If you're human, you've felt this weight of guilt and shame when you do wrong. You have a moral compass, a conscience, the ability to feel, this is not what I should do, and I do. And now you put yourself in a courtroom, and now here you have a judge who knows that about you. This isn't the good news. Just hit pause for a moment. But the reality of the situation is we stand before a perfect and holy judge, the one lawgiver and judge whose opinion matters, and we stand before him guilty. And what we know is that that judge gave his son to pay the price for our freedom. That's the gospel in a nutshell, but it's only half the gospel. Like, because some of us are still trapped in the courtroom, and some of us have this propensity to be told not guilty, to leave the courtroom, but then find our way back hoping he'll say it again. We just leave the courtroom and come back carrying guilt and shame again and again and again. And it says he came to redeem you. He paid the price for you. Look at the rest of 5. That we might, listen. That we might receive adoption to sonship. You went from a courtroom scene with a perfect and holy judge who, because of Jesus, looked at you and said, not guilty. And in that moment of redemption, you were adopted. You, in the moment of your redemption, the moment that you placed your faith in the perfect work of Jesus, in that moment, you said yes to him, received the gift of freedom from your sin, from the consequence and control of it. And in that moment, God, this perfect judge and lawgiver, became daddy. Like, in that moment, you went from redeemed to adopted. It's just a beautiful moment of faith going, I'm helpless, I'm guilty, you know that, please forgive me, I plead Jesus, all I've got is him, not guilty, welcome home. That's a day, that's a crazy day. You went from a courtroom to a living room. You went from perfect and holy judge to Father in a day, simultaneously. Just beautiful. Now, if you're anything like me, that's hard to adapt to. If you've ever stood in front of a judge, it's the 10:30 crowd. A couple of you have. I've been waiting for you. You're here. And you know what it's like to stand in front of a judge and to be completely busted. Has that judge ever let you go and then asked you to hang out? Have you ever been in a courtroom with a judge down in Maricopa County and had a judge invite you to play catch after? Like, no, I've heard another pastor say it like this. Nobody wants to hang out with a judge. I mean, if you're here and you're a judge, I'm sorry. But like, that's why you don't wear your robe. It'd be off-putting. If you walked around identifying yourself as a judge, people are not going to want to hang out. But a dad, a father, I spend some time with a father. And then the next verse, look at verse 6, explains it's going to take some getting used to. Because you're his sons, this is new, because you're his sons, and it's fair to say sons and daughters, because you're his sons and daughters, God sent the Spirit of his Son into our hearts. He sent the Spirit of his Son into our hearts. So now indwelling in us is the Spirit of Jesus, the Spirit who calls out, Abba, Father. So I'm going to need a little help relating to the one that was my judge, who's now my father, so God goes, perfect. I'm going to send the Spirit of my Son into your heart, the same Spirit of the same Jesus who referred to God as Father and now invites us to as well. Primarily knowing him and addressing him as Father. You have permission. You have the indwelling Holy Spirit saying, this is who you are, and it's going to take some getting used to experience this. You will need some supernatural help to relate to a God that is no longer to you your judge, but your Father. And it gets even better. Look at verse 7. So you are no longer a slave. Like, you need to think that. Tell yourself that. I am no longer a slave. You're no longer a slave. To the thing that you've brought with you into this new relationship, it doesn't own you. You're no longer a slave to that sin. It does not control you. And now it's a new identity you're believing into and behaving into. I'm not a slave to that. I'm a child of God. It doesn't own me anymore. I'm a child of God. He's not my judge anymore. He's my Father. That's the primary relationship we have. I'm not a slave. So what does that say to you? It says, I don't have to be afraid. I'm not a slave. I'm his child. And since you're his child, God made you also an heir. You went from slave to son to heir. That means everything he has is yours. This is the Father looking at you going, everything you need, everything you're looking for, listen, primarily it's found in me. And from this point on, mine is yours. Everything you need and you're looking for, it's right here. You're my girl. You're my boy. Everything I have is yours. You're going to reign with me. It's in the Bible. You maybe picture heaven as just a bunch of singing forever and ever, and I'm sure there's going to be some singing. But there's plans. This inheritance doesn't include the throne. He's fine. He'll be there still. But to partner with him and to work with him and to inherit what he has planned as his son or his daughter is a promise. And if this is all true, then you have nothing to fear. If this is all true, you've been set free from the fear of judgment. You need to take a deep breath of truth in and go, I'm his kid. I'm free. I'm innocent. You are free from fear of judgment. When you place your faith in Jesus, he removes that fear. Perfect love casts it out. There's no room for fear. You're free, right? We're messy, and we're still gonna bring that into our lives, and we're gonna forget who we are. And I'm just telling you, in your motivation even today to follow Jesus, some of you, it's still fear. But slaves are motivated by fear. Sons and daughters are motivated by love. Slaves are motivated to obey by fear of consequence, or fear of a dictator, fear of a judge. And this text is saying, you have nothing to fear. You, my friends, are loved. Your sons and daughters and your motivation should be that identity that is new and true about you. That's why we gather. That's why we keep getting together, many of us. We circle up. Like we put you in rows on the weekend, and then we circle up. And what I've done in my life and in yours and my marriage and my friendships, have you ever been in a circle with someone, in a conversation with someone who's forgotten who they are? And they start to tell themselves a story about who they are and what God's like and how he must be disappointed and how he's... Have you ever had to remind someone that they're a son or a daughter? You ever had to remind someone what's true about them? Of course you have. You ever had to remind yourself that you're no longer that person, you're no longer defined. Your new identity, your new image is that you've been made in his image and he has brought you home. You've been adopted, you're his kid, which means, listen, that you are deeply loved by the Father. You are fully accepted and fully pleasing to him. You want to argue with that, and I've said it before and I'm going to say it again. He says you're loved. He says you're accepted. He says you're fully pleasing. You say otherwise, one of you's wrong. And you get to decide if you will believe the voices in your head and the voices of others, or the one of your Father who says, I love you, you're mine, you're my kid forever. You weren't. You were wandering. You strayed. You ignored me. You weren't mine, but you're mine today and you're mine forever. Adopted, my child. So I'm so excited to share a little bit of my story with you, just a little bit. I say a little bit, it'll probably take a minute. My girl, Lindsay, my wife, got pregnant in 2008. We left Chandler, we moved to California. We were 10 minutes from Disney and 10 minutes from the beach, because God's good. And it was probably 15 minutes, I don't want to lie to you. And she got pregnant, and she had this really cute idea of how to tell me she was pregnant. We weren't trying, it just kind of happened. Kids, if you're here, it's really easy. Teenagers, it just all of a sudden out of nowhere, I just looked at her, she's pregnant, you know, and that's how it works. And so, you can explain later, mom and dad, how true that is. And we were excited and, you know, like decorated and got ideas to, we were already talking about like names, and we'd always wanted a family. We were just like, whoa, here we go, family, okay. So doctor's appointment was coming up, and I think it was 8 weeks in, we went to the doctor, and you know, you're waiting for the picture, and the little fuzzy thing that apparently every woman on the planet recognizes everything, but every guy's like, yeah, I see it. You know, we were excited for that, and liars, it's a mushy little thing, you know, and 8 weeks in, got the worst news. There was no heartbeat. And we'd lost the baby. And a lot of us in this room have experienced that just terrible, just dark, frustrating, just it makes you angry and sad, and all these emotions fill us. And then I knew like we were actually gonna have the day where the actual miscarriage takes place. And 8 weeks in, that's a terrible experience. And so the day comes, we're sitting on the couch, and she starts to feel just the worst pain ever. And I throw her in the car real fast and hop on the 5, and I'm doing like 140 down this freeway because I don't care about anything except my girl in the seat who's writhing and making these unbelievable noises, just of anguish and pain, and I don't know if it's going south and if something else is happening as well, if she's gonna, and so I'm just gunning it, and we pull up, and I just slam the brakes and pull up to the thing and open the door, and I help her in, and there's some nurses there with a form. There's a lady with a form, and she holds out this form, and she tells me I have to fill out a form, and I'm like, you, ma'am, I have Aetna, we're good, all right? My girl's struggling, get out of the way. And she was snarky. I was like, why are you being, anyway, sorry, I still got baggage about that lady. I need to find her and apologize for how I treated her, because she was talking about forms. And I'm talking about my woman is struggling, you know, and that day, from that moment on, was just dark and sad and scary. And I'm watching my wife deal with this thing. And I'm like, I work for God. This is what I do. I'm a professional Christian. They'll take anyone. No, but I'm really in that moment of darkness just going, what the heck? And it passes and we go into the next season of what the heck do? We go home that day, and I realized that day I'm supposed to speak at a camp. And I tell Lindsay, I said, oh my gosh, I'm supposed to go to that winter camp with those high school kids. There's no way I'm going. I'll just call them up and I'll tell them, I'm sorry, something's come up, I can't come. There's a billion guys that can do it. Just call someone. And a moment later, she says, I think you should go. And I was like, no, there's no way I'm gonna go. Like, I need to be here with you. I'm not gonna go to some camp. Like, we can't go to a camp. And she's like, no, I'm not going. You should go. Oh. And fellas, let me explain something. This is what's called a test. This moment, I remember thinking, oh, I heard about these moments. You are now saying things that aren't true to see how I will respond and if I will choose you over maybe what's an easier route or something that sounds... So I remember going, no, Dave, I understand that this is a test and I'm not going to fail. I'm going to be right here with you. You're going to need me. She says, no, I think you really should go. Oh, okay. She needed some alone time. She just told me to go. I don't know what, but in her heart, she just said, yeah, you go and I'm going to stay here. Okay. So I called my buddy Travis, and I said, Trav, I just need some company this weekend. Will you come and hang out with me while I'm at this camp? He says, yeah. And I spoke to a bunch of kids about Jesus for 3 days, 4 days, in fact. And I don't remember what I said, and I don't know if I even meant it. I remember going to that camp and saying some things about Jesus, and I wasn't in a good mood, and I didn't really like him at the time. I was confused, I think. It was 8 years ago. I'm much more mature, and I'd never question him today. But in that season, I was angry. I went to this camp and I came back home, and it wasn't very long before what happened is normal to us. We got this baby bug, and it was possible and the potential was there. And so we said, let's try again as soon as we can. Let's try again. Let's start our family. We didn't know we wanted to start a family. That started. And now we definitely want to start this family. And so let's try. So we did. We got the bug bad and we said, we're going to try. We're going to try. And we tried 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 for months. And in that season, we ended up actually moving back here, and I started here at Mission, at Superstition Springs Community Church, and we were still trying. And I mean, gosh, I remember a day we went to Chandler Fashion Center Mall, and we were just walking around, just the two of us, trying to kill time or buy black shirts. I don't know what I was trying to do, but I like them. And everyone, had a baby. Everyone had a baby. Every single person had a baby. Babies were holding babies. Grandmas were having babies. They weren't their grandkids. Grandmas were having babies. Everybody had a baby. All of my friends online were having babies and announcing, here comes our 14th baby. I'm like, y'all selfish. How many kids you need? We've been trying forever. I mean, people that were clearly not supposed to be parents. I'm looking at God going, her? That girl is pregnant again? Do you have any reason to let her be a mom? No. And we'd go to the doctor and go, what's happening? Why can't we just get pregnant? Everyone's getting pregnant. Why can't we? And they say, we can't explain it. We did so many tests. And the doctors one day said, you have what's called unexplained infertility. Thanks, doc. They still billed us. We don't know. Write a check. You're welcome, right? And I'm like, golly. So the season was us just going, maybe we're not supposed to do that. Maybe that was a fluke. And hey, remember when we were dating and we knew we were gonna get married and we started about talking about family? Remember when we talked about adopting? Remember we talked about that, like how beautiful that would be? And we even talked about maybe like adopting first, you know, and then having as many kids as whatever. And maybe we're supposed to do that. And we were like, that's it, that's the plan. We're supposed to do it. We're supposed to adopt. And over a series of time, we realized, man, we're supposed to adopt. We're supposed to adopt. And so we partnered up with this agency, this incredible agency locally here. They worked with us. They set us into probably, 5 million classes that we had to take about parenting. And I'm like, everyone should take these classes. They just let anyone have a baby. We actually went through some training to be parents. It's not really working. I've got to read that book again. But we took all these classes and we created this profile, this like really tidy profile with our picture on it and all these highlights of our life. And it was pre-Instagram, but it looked like an Instagram profile. And everyone, we wanted them to see us. These adoptive moms, these moms that were pregnant would go to this agency and say, "I'm looking for a family," and they'd flip through this book and hopefully pick us. It was this unbelievable, unexplainable experience of putting yourself out there and hoping someone calls. And then we got a call. But it wasn't from the agency, it was from my friend Ron Merrill. And Ron said, "Hey man, there's a girl in my youth group, our high school group, that's pregnant. And she's an incredible kid, and the guy, he's an incredible guy. They were a great couple. They just really wrestled in this area, and she ended up getting pregnant, and they've been talking to family and friends, and they've got all the advice in the world, and they've actually decided that adoption is the best route for them. She wants this baby," her words were that she wants this baby to start its life in a family. They're not ready to provide that, she said. And so for them, that decision for them was, we feel like the best thing for this child is to place it in a family, where from day one, there's gonna be a mom and a dad who are committed to each other forever. And that was what she wanted. And he said, "Yeah, and here's the thing, Ryan, she was at that camp you spoke at." "That camp? That horrible camp. She was there in the room? Yeah, she remembers you. Hey, so do you want me to let her know that you and Lindsay are looking to adopt?" I'm like, "You haven't told her already? You haven't told her yet? Of course I want you to tell her. My goodness, please let her know. I'm patient and prayerful, but I'm seeing an opportunity." And I'm going, "Of course I want you to tell her. Absolutely." So he does. And before we hung up, I said, "Ron, can you just tell me her name? What's her name? Just so we can be praying for her." We stalked her so bad. We went online, and my girl can find out anything she wants about anything or anyone on a computer. And without breaking any laws that I'm aware of, learned everything we possibly could about that young woman, that young man, their family, and everything unfolding. And by the time, I'll spare you that one. I'm going to stick to my notes. It's a filter. I have one. Amazing. It's first time. By the time we hung up and by the time we'd gotten to know her, we were anxious and we were still in the book and still wondering. And then I'm on a bus, a 55-passenger bus, a line of buses out here on the patio on July 18th, 2010. And we're down the road taking a whole bunch of teenagers at this point to summer camp at Forest Home. And we take them to summer camp all the way on the way there. I mean, it's a 55-passenger bus with teenagers. It's not heaven, right? And so I'm sitting on the bus, and all of a sudden, boom, I get an email. And I look down on this bus filled with teenagers, and it says in the subject line, "Adoption, smiley face." Not the emoji, but like a, you know, because that's important. It says adoption. And I open this sacred email. And it says, "Hi, I don't think you know me," which I started laughing right away. "Oh, we know you." It was her. And she said, "I don't think you know me, but I'm 5 months pregnant. And my youth pastor, Ron, said that you might be interested in talking to me about potentially adopting my child. I'd love to talk to you." She wants to talk to me? She wants to talk to me? I'm on a bus with teenagers. I can't talk to anyone. We're going up a hill where phones don't work anymore for 7 days. I have to go up the hill with teenagers, and there's a baby somewhere that might be mine. Get me off the bus. You know, I'm thinking all these things. And I'm showing everyone the email, all these kids sitting around me like, chill out. I'm like, no, I can't believe this. So I call Lindsay and I'm like, you got to call this girl. Prayerful and patient and not pushing, but going, baby, you got to call her. Call her right away. She calls her and calls me back afterwards. And she tells me that I'm on the bus listening. There's a due date. There's an actual due date? Wow, we know when this child might come. Yeah, the due date's November 20th. And I hear that date, and in my head, I just go, oh my gosh, there's a due date. I don't know how to explain it to you, but I get fixated on things, and I can't think about anything else. And November 20th, we get off the bus, and I'm supposed to find cabins. Hundreds of teenagers need my direction. I'm like, just go, just go. Just go, just go. Parents feeling good that Shane's in control now. Just go. There's stuff we're supposed to do, pack bags, unpack, eat, shout, whatever. Just go. There's sermons. Okay, whatever. That'll happen. There's a baby. And we have a few hours to kill, and so I take a bunch of kids from one side of the camp all the way across to the other. If you have ever been to Forest Home, students, you know it's a long walk to get all the way over to this area, and I'm leading a little bit of a tour. It's our first time ever there, and I walk into this brand new room. I walk into this room, and there's, like, games that you can play, ping pong, foosball, whatever, and then there's this craft shop, brand new craft shop in the back, and I promise this going somewhere. I lead the students into the craft shop. Not my forte. I usually don't go to craft shops. I have a Pinterest, but I have not looked at it. I walk into it, and I'm like, well, this is kind of cool, and there's a bunch of kids that are painting things and making things for mom, real cute and quaint and sweet, and then there's this big room over here, and I walk over into this room with my students, and I look in this room, and there is a massive wall of things that you can purchase, these things that you can create and paint and whatever, and one wall is dominated and dedicated to one thing. There are dozens and dozens of saran wrapped, like sealed tight shut calendars. And every single one of them was set to November 20th. Every single one of these guys, I bought one. Because I thought, this is either a miracle or you're terrible. What are the chances? There's 365 options. See? You can change it. November 80th. You know? It can be anything you want. But every one of them staring at me after I got the email 4 hours earlier said it's November 20th. Huh. What a coincidence. 4 months later, I was at a hospital with my wife, and we were sitting in a room, and they brought my son into the room. A little boy who the day before was not my boy. And they wheeled him in, and at one point left him with us. And I'm sitting there with her and him going, really? You're mine? It's my son. Like, she picked him up and, like, knew exactly what to do with him. You know, it's an automatic mom. He was crying and screaming. Nothing's changed. And he was just, she knew exactly how to care for him. And her mascara was like, pff, I remember. Like, you shouldn't have worn mascara today. She's weeping. And we're both, she hands him to me. And I don't know what I'm doing. I can hold a football, but not a baby, you know. And I'm like, but I figured out. And I'm just looking at him. And I'm going, what? This is my son. This is my son. I will never forget putting him in the car seat. He looked so small in this massive car seat, and putting him in the back of the rental car. And, like, nobody pulled us over. Nobody arrested us. Nobody stopped us. We were out of the hospital with a boy, our son. He was ours. He was mine. I remember getting on the 5 in California at night with my son, and people are just woof, woof, right past us. I'm driving, and people are just out of nowhere, just coming, flying by us at like 50. And I'm, you know, doing like 25 miles an hour on the freeway because he's mine. Got to the hotel we were staying at, got in there, and just stared at him. He was mine, my son. The day before, he wasn't. And I'll never forget what it did to my heart. I'll never forget closing the door and bringing him home. That's what God did for my family. Why do I tell you that long story? That's what he does for everyone who places their faith in Jesus. That is exactly what he does for every one of us that says yes to Jesus. He adopts us as his own, his beloved kids, his sons and his daughters. That is exactly what he does. I can't imagine what it does to his heart if it did that to mine. I can't imagine what it does to his heart, our Heavenly Father's heart, when we come home. I can't imagine the anticipation that he feels in that moment where we choose him, when we have a million other choices and we say, I choose you. I want to come home to you. I want to be your child. Yes, I want to be forgiven. Yes, I want to be set free. I primarily want you to be my dad. I want you to be my father. Gosh, what does it do to him when we say yes to that? I hope there's a whole lot of what it did to me when that little boy right there came home to us. He's 5, and just a few weeks ago, we were in California, and I officiated his birth mom's wedding, and he was her ring bearer. It was perfect. And our story pales in comparison to the one that God writes every time somebody comes home. So come home. If you're wandering, come back home. Your Heavenly Father loves you. It's good news, huh? Let me pray for us. We're going to sing one more song that I think is perfect for this. Father, thank you that I am your son. Thank you that we are your sons and daughters, that you have forgiven us, you have redeemed us, and you've taken it to a whole new level by adopting us as your sons and your daughters. I pray that we would be people that would be heralds of this news. But I pray primarily that we would be permeated and saturated by this truth, that you are our Father and you love us and are pleased with us because of what your Son Jesus did for us out of love for us. Pray in his name. Amen. I love you guys. Thank you so much.